Today, we're beyond excited to introduce a bona fide Hollywood legend, a man who has graced our screens in ways only heroes can, Kevin Sorbo.
You've seen him as Hercules, you've cheered for him in God's Not Dead, but it's not just his acting chops that stand out. Kevin is just as mighty in his unwavering faith and commitment to living with purpose.
He's spent decades entertaining us, while also boldly inspiring so many through his values and his voice.
And now he's here to talk with us about storytelling, staying strong in your beliefs, and what it really means to lead a life that's invested with purpose.
Welcome to Invested with Purpose, making the most out of our time, talent, and treasure. I'm Kara.
And I'm Brian. And today we have with us Kevin Sorbo, or as many of you may know, Hercules. We're just going to jump right in with it. Welcome, Kevin. Thank you for joining us with Invested with Purpose. So, Kevin, I read that you were at a Billy Graham crusade when you found Christ, or Christ found you, we shall say. I'd love to hear just a little bit about that, because I have such respect for Mr. Graham, and there's so much that he did in all of his tours, his crusades. So, yeah, could you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I mean, quite frankly, I've always been a Christian. I don't look at it as a rebirth or anything. I grew up in a Lutheran church in Minnesota, typical of the, you know, Scandinavian bloodline, St. John's Lutheran Church. And two things happened that year, actually, when I was 13 years old. We got a new youth pastor that started this place called The Room at our church, where every Wednesday night at 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock, it was 7th graders or 12th graders to hang out in this room. You know, play ping pong, play pool. We would also read the Bible. And he was just a really cool guy, because my pastor at that time, a much older gentleman, just really scared the hell out of me. He was just a pretty scary guy. And, you know, breathing was a sin with this guy. So, Pastor Lee was, you know, he was great with us. And then the Reverend Billy Graham was coming to town. It was August, summer in Minnesota. I know people think Minnesota doesn't get warm. It gets very hot and humid, just as anywhere else in July, August. So it was a hot August night. It was a full moon. And we took about 7 busloads of our church to go see outside at the St. Paul Fairgrounds. And I know that Billy Graham, they had a lot to do. His company had like a production base up there in St. Paul, I think it was. I mean, they had a big presence there. And it was 250 to 300,000 people outside. It was unbelievable. And it's just, I remember I was really moved by what he was talking about. It was much moved as just being in awe of the size of the people and just the reaction to everything he was saying by everybody. It was like this just huge organism, you know, of bodies out there. And at the end of it, he said, you know, please come up if you want to. We have a lot of volunteers. You want to pray, just talk, whatever, whatever's on your mind, you know. So for whatever reason, I was so moved to go up there. And normally at 13 years old, I never would have done something like that.
Right.
I was a very good student. I was an A&B student, but I was the last guy to raise my hand. To me, it was like, why can't I just say something? Why would I raise my hand and ask for permission? That's one of my problems in public schools. That's a whole nother issue. So I went up there, and I remember my buddy Jeff said, where are you going? I said, I don't know. I got to go up there, man. I just have to. So I went up there. I'm sitting on the grass with this guy that was probably 35 years old. So he's really old for me when I was 13. And all of a sudden, a hand went on my head. I turned up and looked over my shoulder, and it was the Reverend Billy Graham. And
wow.
The moon was right behind his head. It's like these rays of moonbeam coming out. Oh, you know, I heard the choir music going and everything. And all I could think of, I just saw all those photos I've seen ever since, paintings of Jesus, where they always have this glow coming off of him. Mm-hmm. You know? And we started talking. We talked a little bit about sports, talked about my school. He probably spent like 3-4 minutes with me. And he said a quick prayer. He had his bodyguards with him, of course. He's got it. There's a lot of wackos out there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it had a huge impact on me in just terms of just meeting him. I told that story years ago to Franklin. And But after I told that story, I was on the Larry King show, and I get a call from Chicken Soup for the Soul, and mm-hmm. said, "Look, we're doing a hardcover book for the life of Billy Graham, 101 people who've met and been touched by him. And they asked me to tell my story in it. And then I was very flattered by that, of course. And the Reverend, he loved at that point, I've already been doing my, you know, my faith-based movies and stuff. So he was well aware of who I was. And they asked if I would do the publicity and go fly around in the planes to do the publicity on the release of the book. So it was quite an honor to be able to do something like that.
It's amazing.
Yeah, Billy Graham is just such a hero of the faith. It's just incredible to hear the stories that are still the people he came in contact with, you know, years ago.
Yeah.
And I know at the same time, you also, you know, I've of course read a lot about you. You decided or felt that you were going to be an actor at a very young age. Can you tell us a little bit about that as well? Like, how did that come about?
There was the Guthrie Theater in Minneapolis is very famous. Anybody in the Broadway world knows of the Guthrie Theater. A lot of Broadway actors start there or they go out there to do performances. It's an amazing theater. A lot of people don't realize that there's more theaters per capita in Minneapolis, St. Paul than there is on Broadway. There's a lot.
They
really invest in the culture, the arts, the cultural arts and everything. And so in fifth grade, we took a field trip to the Guthrie to see The Merchant of Venice. And it was Shakespeare. I was 11. I didn't know what the heck they're saying because I was 11 and it was Shakespeare.
It's Shakespeare.
I was mesmerized. On the way home, my mom was a chaperone on our bus and I sit next to my mom and she said, "So what do you think?" And I said, "You know, Mom, I'm going to be an actor." And she gave me that loving of mom pat on the thigh. That's nice, dear. So
how are you going to make a living doing
but
this?
The seat had been set, but the dichotomy of that, I'm sure it probably still exists today, which is kind of sad in a way. But I was like, okay, I got to be cool about this because I'm also a jock. And as a jock, you don't do any of those kind of things. Because
no, those two things
don't
mix.
You make fun of people in drama class. I was a football, basketball, baseball guy. And so I really didn't start. I was a closet thespian, I should say. And it wasn't until I got to college that I had a double business major, but then I started fooling around with acting classes and stuff like that. And I signed an agent in Minneapolis. A lot of people don't realize Minneapolis is home to a lot of big national headquarters for Best Buy, Target. Mm-hmm. You got 3M, Pillsbury, General Mills. It just goes on and on. So I started doing a lot of commercials. I signed with an agent, an acting and modeling agency, and started doing a lot of stuff. And I got my all-important Screen Actors Guild card. So when I did move to L.A., I already had a commercial agent because I really had a good tape, already like 15 commercials under my belt. So that was never a problem getting an agent out there. But I do remember my old agent at the time told me, "I have to go to New York. You have to do Broadway to become famous." And I said, "How many plays has Tom Cruise done?"
You know, we can't do this without mentioning Hercules.
Right. I mean, that's really what springs us into your launch to the world, right? Is Hercules.
Did you know when you were first starting in Hercules that it was going to be as big as what it ended up being, that it put you on the map? Did you have any inclination?
I had good feelings about what was going on with my career at that point. I know that, God blessed me in a lot of different ways. I never had to work another job when I was out there. I worked very well commercially. I was getting guest spot roles on Murder, She Wrote, on The Commish, on Cheers. I was getting spots. Things were starting to happen. And I also noticed that now when I got a call for an audition to go to Universal or Paramount or wherever it may be, I was all of a sudden getting better parking spots. I didn't have to park where all the other actors were 7 blocks away and marched and, you know, begged to get in. And I said, okay, things are starting to happen. Then did a couple pilots. I got leads in a couple pilots, one for CBS, one for ABC. They didn't get picked up. And I took comfort in knowing the fact that Tom Selleck did 7 leads and pilots before he got Magnum. So
I didn't know that.
Okay, part of the routine. But things were starting to happen. When I got the series Hercules, it was initially going to be just 5 two-hour movies. And they auditioned 2,800 actors in North America for the role. I had 7 callbacks on that.
Wow.
And when I got it, it was going to be 5 two-hour movies. The kicker for me, the biggest thrill for me, well, number one, we shot New Zealand, but more than number one, I got a whole year with Anthony Quinn. And I know a lot of younger people don't know who Anthony Quinn is, but he was one of the bigger stars back in the golden age, back in the 40s and 50s and 60s. And to get stories of, you know, Guns of Navarone, Zorba the Greek, Lawrence of Arabia. I mean, all those amazing movies he was in, and become very good friends with him up until he passed away 9 years later. It was during the middle of, it was five to our movies. In the third movie, it just hit me, and I called my agent, and I said, I bet you they make this a series. And they said, why? I said, because there's nothing else like it on TV at this time. There's nothing like it. And sure enough, Universal called back within about a month after that and said, you're staying down there. And by season three, we became the most watched TV show in the world. We were in 176 countries.
Yeah, that's just remarkable.
Yeah, and it was amazing. It was a blessing to be part of that. I did it for 7 years. It was great.
Was there challenges in that as far as like, I mean, this is getting nuanced a little bit, but, you know, just staying in a certain shape you had to stay in? Did you have to stay on a certain diet? I mean, you had to obviously have a look to be Hercules the whole time.
Well, you know, initially when they called me for the first audition, I kind of went, I'm in good shape. I'm 6'3". I was 225 pounds. I worked out all the time. I lived right in the Santa Monica-Venice border. I was at Gold's Gym at least six times a week. I was rollerblading, biking all the way down to Manhattan Beach and back every day. I mean, I was in great shape. And it was another way to fend off the frustrations of Holly to work out my aggressions that way. And it was long hours. There's no question. A lot of days for me, probably 16 to 17 hours a day, door to door. That includes drive time on the set, lifting weights and getting out back home. I maybe average 4 hours of sleep a night, because every night after getting home, after working out, I'd have to memorize another 8 to 10 pages of dialogue for the next day. So It was a workout, but I'm not complaining. I had a blast in it.
And you managed to fall in love and get married with one of your co-stars.
Yes, I did.
We love Sam.
Yes, she was great.
Yes.
I did. She came down our very first day on the set. I looked at her and I said, how are we going to make this work, Sam? She looks at me, what are we talking about? I go, well, I'm in New Zealand. We got a water hazard. We call it the Pacific Ocean between us, you and Los Angeles. And she goes, Kevin, I don't date actors, she said. So I wore her down.
Last words.
That's how we do it, is men. You got to wear them down.
Yeah.
You know, I have heard you speak before. I have gone to a Christian film festival here in Orlando where you spoke. And you had said that you were one of the first to be canceled before it was cool to be canceled. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because when I think of, you know, Christian actors, producers, directors that are invested with purpose, you are at the top of that list because of everything that you have stood for in the face of persecution.
You know, I was very fortunate. I think I was one of the first actors to really do more quality Christian movies, because I know Christian movies always had kind of a look of videotape, horrible scripts, horrible acting. My first really unapologetically faith-based movie was called What If? And I've done over 90 movies, and What If? In my book is my top three movies of all time. I think it's a wonderful movie. I told Dallas Jenkins directed it. He's doing a little thing called The Chosen right now.
Yeah, that little thing.
We recently had Stan Johnson on
He directed that movie, and we shot it in Michigan. Same writers that did God's Not Dead a couple years later, which obviously was a huge hit. What If is better? That's the trouble with independent movies. How do you get them out there? We don't have a $100 million advertising budget like they do for these $300 million Avatar movies. So we got to rely on word of mouth. And God's Not Dead got that word of mouth. But What If is even better. But that really opened the door for me. And obviously you mix that with social media and everything, the growth of it. I've always been vocal, but not in a negative way, where I stand conservatively and where I stand as a Christian. And my manager and agent 10 years ago called me in and said, we can't work with you anymore. That studios don't want to hire you. And I'm going, well, what? Why? What's going on? And they said, well, the things you're posting. I said, you mean the truth? They're having trouble with the truth. And sure enough, and then, you know, obviously you all know it's accelerated over the last 6-7 years.
Oh, tremendous.
It's gotten insane. And, you know, everything that I said, I can even bring up COVID. Everything I said about COVID ended up being true. And I actually posted on X not too long ago. I said, I need more conspiracy theories because all mine keep coming true. So there's going to be no apology from all those people, of course, that went after me and all these CNN and all these bozos that just, as you know, they just lie every single day. And, I'm the first guy. I mean, I get actors the last 6-7 years. I get actors, not just actors, directors, camera guys, makeup people. They come up to me in the set individually, whispering like it's a drug deal. And they thank me for being a voice for them. And I said, well, be a voice for yourself. Because there's the biggest problem. I said, if we all stand together and start getting more vocal about it, I said, then this stuff will not be as damaging as it is. And it is getting better. I think more and more people are waking up now and come out. Yes. So I love the voices like a John Boyd coming out there, Neil McDonough, and yes. all these people are speaking up more and more and more. And we got to not be afraid. Fear is government's favorite weapon. We got to wake up the lions. The sheep are going to be sheep. Let's mm-hmm. wake up the lions, because we got a battle on our hands. And Hollywood is winning that culture battle. But I'm going to keep making the moves I'm doing to fight back as best that I can.
So what is your advice right now to a young aspiring actor starting out in Hollywood that doesn't want to lose their soul in the pursuit of fame or success? What is your best advice to them?
Well, I think it's easy to do. You know, I always tell people, take acting classes. You don't have to go to college to be an actor. I know there's wonderful drama things and, you know, minors in drama, majors in drama, whatever. But I think there's better coaches in L.A. or New York or something to learn the craft and, you know, keep up there and get some practice with it. I always encourage getting a commercial agent. But we see how the commercial world has changed so much, too. So I probably wouldn't work at all in commercials right in today's world, because I'm a white person. And I say that with just ridiculousness, because I think the third highest guy in Disney, they caught him on tape and he got interviewed. He thought it was just an interview, but the woman had a hidden camera going. And he said, look, we are told not to hire any straight white men anymore in Disney. Mm-hmm. And you're going, it is so crazy. And you look at racism and, you know, it's not a one way street. And it's nuts what we're doing to people right now. It's crazy. It's insanity. But I tell these young kids, I say, get a commercial agent, get yourself out there, put miles on in front of the camera any way you can, do independent films. There's so many good Christian production companies out there. Not only with Sorbo Studios, but you got the Irwin Brothers, you got the Kendricks. You got more and more people jumping on board. There was Sony Affirm. They moved on to, they sold to GAC or whatever it's called. I can't remember. Mm-hmm. But I think they're there now. But, you know, they're getting bigger and better. You're getting more actors that want to get involved. You get more people on the other side of the camera. I get to Sorbo Studios. I recommend people go to sorbostudios.com and sign up all the time. And yes. We got a lot of good things coming in the pipeline with that as well. And by the way, since it is Christmas, yes. I know mm-hmm. this is that post-Christmas going on right now, but you can get this wonderful devotional book my wife and I wrote together, and you can get that by going to sorbostudios.com as well. Oh, awesome. We've got a lot of good things on there from my books, my wife books. Please sign up. We keep up to date. I've got 4 movies coming out next year in post-production right now.
Wow.
3 documentaries coming out.
You just had The Firing Squad come out in 2024 with Cuba Gooding Jr. The Firing Squad, which just came out in 2024, yep. which the message for this week, especially being Thanksgiving, is so apt because I just watched it. And if for anybody who hasn't seen it, it's about a group of gentlemen that are in an Indonesian prison. Yeah. And, you know, and their faith story, basically. But it just is a reminder of the gratitude that we should have. And so tell us a little bit about, which movie was it that you had spoken of?
Oh, Elijah Peel. They just wrapping up here. Anything
Elijah Peel will come out hopefully by next year later. It's, you mentioned, I'm going to say quickly, on Firing Squad. That's a true story. My character was an American kid over there when he was in his 20s, killed a man, got life in prison. While he was in prison, he became a pastor. And he saved a lot of people's lives. He was actually executed in 2015. So it's not that long ago. Cuba Gooding Jr. Mm-hmm. is great in it as he marches out singing Amazing Grace. And it's just a wonderful moment. And Elijah Peel is a, I played the manager to, I guess, comparing to Justin Bieber or something like mm-hmm. that. Justin Bieber doesn't have a drug problem, but he's famous like Justin Bieber or right. Justin Timberlake. And he lives a very typical rock and roll lifestyle with too much drugs, too much women, too much booze, too much everything. And he actually flatlines on stage.
Wow.
And while he's in the hospital, he gets lucky, gets resuscitated. And while he's in the hospital, a little 7-year-old girl peeks in on him that's there with leukemia, and she's going to treatment. And she walks in and starts telling him about Jesus and about God. And it's a very touching story. And I don't know what's going to come out, but it was a cool movie to be part of.
I mean, the common thread through all these movies, and it's something I think, like, it's not just Christians. It's just people to just want an uplifting story with an ending that gives you something of a crescendo where there's hope, there's optimism.
Fine.
And yeah, I mean, that's what it is. I don't want to see a depressing, sour movie. I mean, unless I'm really,
and that's all they want to do. That's right. All Hollywood wants to do. Yeah. You hit that key there. I got 2 key words. You hit one: hope. People are looking for hope, and people are looking for redemption. Yeah. I mean, you know, Jesus and God always have redemption on the table, except who want to actually go for it. So I like doing movies. I call them actors' movies, where characters that people know about or can relate to. They walk out of the movie and they think about it. You don't think about it walking out of when you see Deadpool or an Avatar or the Pirates of the Caribbean. They're fun. The visual effects are
mostly fun. It's an adrenaline rush and then it's over.
But it's not like you, boy, that character really touched me this way or that way. It's just fun. Right. And I get it, why people want to go to it. I enjoy them as well. But I like movies as an actor that make you think, you can relate to that person and has a message that has hope in there, because right now our world's insane. And I'm so happy that President Trump got back in the office again. I see him quite often living out here in Florida as well. I've been to Mar-a-Lago a number of times. I've golfed with him before. And I really think that a lot of wonderful things are going to happen over the next 4 years.
We just got to know who can drive the ball farther. Okay. Are you allowed to tell us? Kevin, I love how you've brought up the raising the bar in Hollywood for Christian movies. And here at Timothy Plan, we have an anti-family entertainment screen. It's very near and dear to us that we do not own companies that would produce stuff like you've talked about with Deadpool and some of the other stuff that I wouldn't take my kids to go see. So we're very happy to hear the elevation in faith-based movies. Going back a little bit in your career, back when you were doing more secular stuff, you said years ago you had a health issue where you had blood clots and basically, I mean, it could have all been over. Like I don't know if any of this would have happened. Can you tell us a little bit about that scare and how that sure brought you closer to God and ultimately
in the faith-based movie? 5 on Hercules, I was doing most of my own stunts because I liked it. It was the athlete in me. We rehearsed fight scenes every day. We shot 2 or 3 every episode. So even on days we weren't filming fight scenes, I would, I block a scene. They'd go light it, and I got 30 minutes over here with the stunt guys to work on the fights. Because most of the time, I had to fight 4 guys, 8 guys, 12 guys. So it was like a dance choreographed.
You're Hercules, man.
And but it's I started problems with my left arm. I couldn't think what was going on with it. When I came back home to L.A., they found a lump up here weighing my left subclavicle. And it was weird. I was doing publicity for my latest movie called Call the Conqueror, Call of the Father, Conan the Barbarian. Mm-hmm. So Arnold played Conan, and even though he's older than me, I'm apparently his father.
It's Hollywood.
I went to my chiropractor before they're going to do his biopsy and his lump they found up here, and a voice in my head said, "Don't let him crack your neck." And I was being warned by God. I know I was, and I didn't pay attention. And the chiropractor, who's never cracked my neck, because I like my neck crack, for some reason, cracked my neck that day. And I sat up and why did you do that? You know, because I never liked it. Even a new chiropractor, I'll say, crack anything, but leave the neck alone. He cracked it, which is weird. Well, that ended up being an aneurysm. They had been spitting blood clots down. But that crack that way, a neurologist called retrograde flow. It sent a series of clots into my brain. It took me 4 months to learn how to walk and balance again. It took me 3 years to fully recover. I still have a 10% loss of vision in both eyes. It was a long recovery for me. It was pretty tough. But I think that, you know, my fiance at the time, before we got married, Sam, was very strong, you know, for me. And my faith is strong for me. And I wrestled with God a little bit. I was pretty angry. My career was really starting to fly. But, you know, it's I wrote a book. I'm going to show it right here.
Yes.
It's called True Strength, My Journey from Hercules to Mere Mortal, and How Nearly Dying Saved My Life. Didn't want to write the book. My wife made me write it. And it's been a godsend since. It came out 12, 13 years ago. And all of a sudden, I'm doing 12 to 15 speaking events a year. Motivational speaking, health speaking, whatever it is. Because really, we all hit roadblocks in life. God never promised anybody an easy life in this world. So how do you react to those roadblocks? You can blame the world, friends, family, God. But the reality is you got to look in the mirror and say, okay, what am I going to do? Because Sam always said whenever I got down, Kevin, it happened. What are you going to do about it? And it was motivation for me to fight back and get my health back.
Well, you're speaking to the importance that I feel like I held out when I was younger and trying to find a wife and wanting to make sure I found a Christian woman. And I tell my son this all the time. He's 15. I'm like, you have to understand the importance of being equally yoked in your marriage and how much that matters to you, because now you're both in your own ways, advocates for Christians in film and homeschooling in so many different areas. You know, how do you all balance all this?
It's crazy. I mean, homeschooling helped a lot because once Hollywood kicked me out, I just got involved in the, you know, through Sorbo Studios, but also other independent movie people came to me and say, hey, we want to work with you. And so I would travel a lot while Sam would just travel with me with the kids. So they're always with together, which is great. Sam's so busy with the homeschooling stuff. She's wrote her fifth book on things right now. She's crazy. Yes. She's got an award up in Washington, D.C. for her work in the homeschooling world. We just did a speaking event together in Milwaukee as well. So it's, you make it work. I'm a very driven person. I've always been that way. And I think a lot of that was instilled by my parents. They grew up on farms in Iowa. Didn't have any money, but they grew up just tough and strong and taught all five of the kids in my family. I'm the fourth of five kids, that you work hard. You don't expect handouts. Be part. They were JFK Democrats, you know, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. There are no Democrats that talk the way today. JFK would be a conservative today. All you got to do is listen to his 1960 inauguration speech. It's pretty blatant. That half the Republicans don't talk that way. So it's we live in a world now that is quite different than what I grew up in, certainly quite different from what my parents grew up in the 30s and 40s and 50s.
Well, you are surely invested with purpose. So we thank you so much for being on the show today, Kevin. We value you. We value the work that's being done through your family, through your children, as well as your wife. We're watching from afar and admiring. So it's great to have you on the show. Thank you for joining us on Invested with Purpose, making the most out of our time, talent, and treasure.
Thank you. God bless you guys. Thank you.
Invested with Purpose is brought to you by Timothy Partners Limited, advisor to the Timothy Plan Funds. Timothy Plan is a family of biblically responsible mutual funds and ETFs. For more information, please visit Timothy Plan's website at www.timothyplan.com. Some of our podcast guests may have a relationship with Timothy Partners Limited on behalf of Timothy Plan, including affiliations, partnerships, or sponsorships. However, guests are not compensated for their appearances, and their opinions do not constitute paid testimonials. Please be aware that investments carry risks and individual experiences may vary. Consult with a financial advisor for personalized advice. And remember to find us on all of the major social media platforms such as YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn.